Peace and love.
PACA, Pan-African Community Action, will be holding the community town hall, the harm of crime bills, and the future of community power in Chaka City. On Saturday, July 13th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., D.C. residents are invited to discuss how the Secure D.C. crime bill targets the black working class and criminalizes our youth, and how to develop real people-centered solutions to community safety. There will be speakers, group exercises, lunch, and a performance by the Afro-Go-Go Roots Collective, Crank Lukongo Unplugged. The Harm of Crime Bills and the Future of Community Power in Chocolate City, Saturday, July 13th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the RISE Demonstration Center, 2730 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Southeast D.C. More information and registration can be found online, PACA, that's P-A-C-A, crimebilltownhall.eventbrite.com. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Growing up in the church, three queer folks got the call and came together. I'm Daffo the Flower with the God Glow Up.
And I'm Jay Flower, the church girl gone God, a.k.a. Miss Praise and Prince.
I'm Jay Barber, everybody uncle and father. We're here offering a sanctuary for queer folks.
Here we believe God is for everybody.
This is the Fellowship Hall on Inside Out. Hey,
I don't know why I just started laughing. What's wrong?
We're going to sing.
This is the Fellowship Hall on Inside Out. The Inside Out Collective illuminates and celebrates the rich diversity that is the LGBTQIA+ experience. We are proud to be a part of the legacy of cutting-edge public affairs programming on WPFW, home of Jazz and Justice Radio. Inside Out airs on every Monday at 6 p.m. on 89.3 FM and WPFWFM.org. Call us today. We'd love to talk to you at 202-588-0893. Call us again today. We're on for the next hour at 202-588-0893. Every member of the collective brings their unique voice and perspective to the show. And we're typically airing every third Monday of the month. I'm going to delete that. And welcome. This is Fellowship Hall, a sanctuary for queer folks. And today we are talking and celebrating queerness in the Black church. And we have two very, very special guests that I'm going to introduce. Reverend Mashawn D. Simon is an equity and inclusion. Did somebody say something? I heard something. Okay, sorry. Reverend Mashawn D. Simon is an equity and inclusion advocate who centers his preaching, writing, and scholarship on cultural competency, identity, and equity. A Metro Atlanta native, Mashawn is also the founder of Project Joshua, a social impact endeavor committed to providing grief-focused wellness support for those who identify as Black and LGBTQIA. He is currently pursuing his doctoral candidate at Columbia Theological Seminary. DeMario Green is our second guest, who is a D.C. native and a proud graduate of Howard University in Washington, D.C., where he earned a bachelor's degree in political science. He is currently the director of policy and government relations for the Chicago Community Loan Fund. The role was created just for him. And there he is working in the public policy arena and advocacy for his legislative and regulatory priorities. A D.C. native, I'm also proud to say he is the founder of the Agape Ministry at Union Temple Baptist Church. Welcome, DeMario and Reverend Mashawn. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for
having
me. Hey.
Hey. Jay Flower. Yes. Can I pop in? Can we check in on each other? Can we just give a good...
Yeah, I don't know why my video keeps turning off. I don't know what's happening. I'm very cute. Oh, I can see... I see y'all. I thought you saw me this whole time. I was like trying to eat some soup as per usual, but I was fine with that.
Was it that same soup you had last time?
No. Okay. This time it was like roast beef and cheese. Let's not talk about it. It was a lot. It was a lot happening. It's been a very busy day.
Okay.
You just got to make it happen sometimes. But yeah, if y'all could turn on y'all videos, that would be great. They can just hear us, but we would love for this to be a conversation. And for those of you just tuning in, this is Fellowship Hall as a part of the Inside Out Collective. And we are going to be celebrating LGBTQIA+. I need to learn how to put the IA in it. LGBTQIA+ in the Black church. We've heard a lot about church hurt and church repair, and this conversation is about this, spinning that on its head, about how the church is doing better, how we can celebrate, how we can recognize the good that's being done and recognize the power that's being happening right now. So DeMario and Reverend Mashawn, I just want to ask you first if you could share with us your story about not necessarily coming out, but coming in and your walk with your faith.
Mario, you go first.
And just so y'all know, they friends. So
as far as my walk, I mean, I joined the church at 9 years old. It took me a while to figure out my place in the church. As I was growing up, both simultaneously Black, fat, and queer, it's just figuring out which one of those lanes I was able to occupy the most comfortably. And the church was always a safe haven to a degree. But it always felt like there was something missing in terms of the experience. And for me, that just kind of created a lot of internal questions about what I wanted church to look like for me, what I felt like God was supposed to be in my life, and what it is that I wanted my future to look like. And that prompted a lot of different questions and a lot of church searches. But I never found anywhere that compared to my home church at Union Temple. But the main issue at Union Temple was just that I didn't feel like the queerness was being celebrated enough. So for me, I took it upon myself to be like, if no one else is going to start this conversation, let me go ahead and do this out of my own discomfort, because I couldn't sit with it any longer. So I just had some initial conversations with our leadership team, and we had been going through some transitions at the church. So it was probably the right time to have those conversations. And everyone seemed so open and welcoming and embracing to having the conversations while also recognizing the realities of, you know, changing some people's perspectives and how difficult that may be. But it felt really good and very welcoming to be able to have those conversations, that kind of open dialogue with the church leadership. And that's kind of where we are today. This took a long time. The conversation about starting the Agape Outreach Ministry started in 2017. We got things rolling around 2019. We had our first event in December of 2019 for World AIDS Day. And then, as you all know, the world came to a screeching halt during the pandemic, and all the progress that we had kind of came to a halt. And then I moved. so that brought things even further to a halt. But unbeknownst to me, things are moving in the background on behalf of this ministry to bring a queer minister to Union Temple and to really bring back our efforts to really make sure that LGBTQ+ folks of color, particularly Black LGBTQ+ folks, were centered in the church and that they felt like they had a place there too. And not just as like an accessory or like, you're welcome to direct the choir and then go sit down somewhere. But to feel like they had full membership in the church and had a full experience there that really represented all of who they were. That was long. Sorry.
No, that was perfect. Thank you for sharing that. And your
that was a good history lesson.
Yeah.
You know, so DeMario and I have known each other for a few years, but to be quite honest, like, I didn't realize DeMario's real name until recently. And so I'm learning a lot about DeMario within this year of 2024.
Oh, can you share his street name? What's your street name, DeMario?
There's no streetness to it. But because Facebook is Facebook and people are people, I had to create a separate Facebook account for all the, like, queer happenings that were going on in my life. Mm-hmm. So I used my middle name, and that's where we started with that. And then that page took on a life of its own.
Okay, cool.
So that's how I know him. I know him through this alias.
Yes. John is my middle name, and that's how most people know.
Okay.
Kind of like the triple identity, not the dual identity, W.E.B. Du Bois. You got the black, you know, you got to switch it up three times. Like, oh, let me put my gay stuff over here. So, Awesome. How brave of you to do that too, to start to speak to the ministers and all that. That was so brave. I'm so glad that you did that, and that, you know, there are folks out there who are strong and brave and like, no, we're going to be seen and heard and not just in the choir or direct in the choir. So shout out to that.
I'm grateful too.
Tamara's doing great things in the world. Well, hello everyone. I am Mashawn D. Simon. Based in Metro Atlanta. I'm currently right now in my home office in Stone Mountain, Georgia, where my husband and I reside. My walk has been an interesting one, and very, I like to suggest, not very, very non-traditional in a sense, in that I didn't necessarily grow up in the church, but part of the reason why was because my father, God rest his soul, who passed 3 years ago, was a messy man. And my father had a whole other family in the neighborhood where the church was that my family was rooted in. And so as a result of that, I didn't grow up in that church. So I didn't grow up in church. And my family has some really deep roots in the AME church, the African Methodist Episcopal Church. My great aunt, the late Clevia Parks, was a church secretary for several decades at one church in particular, and have cousins who are pastors of AME churches, et cetera, et cetera. And cousins who are evangelists in Church of God in Christ. But I didn't grow up in church because of church mess. I started going to church in elementary school with friends. So church for me was just social. It was something that we just did. I did with these twins who I was really close to in grade school. And over time, my family eventually started going to the family church, the AME church. And I would like to suggest that I have always questioned, I've always had many questions. And one of the biggest questions that I had growing up was the contradictions. And so I knew early on in the spaces that I worshiped that the entirety of me wasn't welcome. And it wasn't welcome because I heard it from the pulpit. And I had pastors who, you know, it was alleged that they may be same-sex attracted, but they couldn't be that, who they were authentically, because of the church politics that sort of permeated throughout, especially the AME church. But somewhere along the way, in high school, and soon after, like when I first started undergrad, I took notice that there was something occurring in me, and I wasn't quite sure what that occurring was. And so I thought that there was a possibility that I might have a call on my life. But my pastor at the time was like, no, you need to focus on school and keep it there. And so that's just sort of what happened. And I lived, if you will, a very gay life. Like, I came out when I was 15, 16 years old. Like, there was no questioning of who I was. And I had no desire to lie about who I was dating. I tell this joke that I had a boyfriend named Sean. We spelled our names the same way. And I didn't feel comfortable calling him Sam or Samantha or what have you. No, he was Sean. And so I started my come out process when I was in high school. But that also meant that I was clear that theologically, as it pertained to what I was hearing in the church, all of me wasn't welcome. And so it took me quite a long time. Like, I walked away from the church. I left church altogether. I sort of went and lived my life. I chased after academic accomplishments, et cetera, et cetera. And then one day, hanging out with a friend who was dating a boy who played drums at an affirming church, they invited me to church, and it started my process. But what was interesting was I would connect with these individuals who were heavy in ministry, but in the closet. And one in particular, who is now a pretty well-known bishop across this country, I like to say, I was mentoring him out of the closet, he was mentoring me into ministry. And somewhere in my mid-20s, I surrendered to a call that I had not been. For a long time, I kept saying that I was going to be the spouse of a preacher, and that's where I was. And I was completely fine with that. But to be
first
a preacher,
man. Not the first man. First
I was going to be a first man.
Yeah.
I was completely fine with that. I was like, great, I'll sit on the front row. I'll wear my cute hats.
Yes.
I'll be good. It'll be all good. And no, I was the one with the call. And so that's just sort of how I got to where I am today.
Nice. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing.
I mean, to cut in, but, I just want to say this is Inside Out, and you're listening to DAFO. J. Flower Foster, J. on WPFW 89.3 FM. You can give us a call at 202-588-0893. Again, that's 202-588-0893. Let's get back to that conversation.
Yes, and when you call, please share with us your story of your church hurt and also your story of your church repair. It's so powerful to hear that when you were ministering, helping that friend come out, he was helping you come into your own calling. And I'm so envious of people who came out in high school, because I feel like I was like reckless right. teenager in my 20s. And I wish I could have just been reckless as a teenager instead. I wanted to ask, a lot of times the conversations around the bad things that has been said in the pulpit, the things that church has done to harm us. What have you seen Black churches do and affirming churches do to make sure that LGBT folks feel included and feel affirmed? And this is really for all of us, really, because all of us do have sacred spaces that we belong to. So what have you seen? Just one thing, each of us, one thing that you've been like, that's right. This church is, go ahead, church.
I'll start. So I go to Day Spring Community Church. Reverend Dr. Cynthia Turner Wood is my pastor. Say again.
I said woo woo.
Yeah, and like it's just been. I know she's being more intentional right now, more intentional about including, you know, saying siblings and not just brothers and sisters, or just really trying to be intentional about including the LGBTQIA. But even before she was intentional about it, this is my home church. Like, I never felt shunned. I've never felt, you know, the vibe of like, you're gay, you're going to hell. That was never in my church, or I never felt it. So I always felt comfortable bringing my friends, bringing my partners, you know, inviting folks to church. I'm like, no, it's cool. You don't feel that weight. You don't feel crazy. You don't feel like you're a sore thumb sticking out. Like, it's all love. So the vibe has always been there, but I'm grateful that we're becoming more intentional about being more open and inclusive and more loud about it. I actually shared your event, Jay Flower, coming up with Agape Ministries and all that. I shared that with her. So hopefully she'll be able to come and be a part of that as well.
Nice. We've been trying to get her and Pastor A to meet for a while, so that would be dope.
Exactly.
I'll jump in. There are two that come to mind to me almost immediately. One, Delman Coates, who is in you all's area. I forget the name of his church. I remember years ago when Delman sort of became the face of like this shift to affirming work, especially in churches that were not considered affirming or traditional in a sense. And then we really, really understood. I had the opportunity to talk to him a couple years ago about how and why he got to that point. And he talked about being in these meetings with preachers and pastors from the DMV area and the ways in which they were doing the exact opposite of what he thought they were called to do. They were being exclusionary instead of being inclusive. And he could not wrap his brain around how or why a church would land on keeping or creating spaces that did not feel safe for all of God's children. And so he shifted his entire theology, which also meant having very intentional conversations with his members about what it meant to be inclusive. And he did that not just from the pulpit, but just in conversations with members. Like when members would not agree with something he preached about, he would invite them to his study and he would sit down and he would talk to them about it and point out things in scripture or point out things in society to help them sort of walk along this process of being better and more inclusive. And so I really admire him for doing that because I think he was cutting edge. He was doing that well before a lot of preachers and pastors were doing that. Mm-hmm. The second one that comes to mind for me is a video that I saw recently from the pastor of Union Temple, Pastor A, and the way in which she, for all intents and purposes, apologized for the ways in which the church had been abusive, for the ways in which the church had not supported those who are God's beloved, and ensure that that Union Temple and any church was as much of a safe space for those who I like to call members of the eligibility community or the alphabet mafia, along with everyone else, our heteronormative siblings in our congregations. So those are the two that come to mind for me almost immediately.
Thank you for sharing. So I hear language, just changing some language and making it inclusive to include siblings and less gender specific, inviting people to conversation. Like if they don't agree, let's talk about it. Making a clear and resounding apology, just saying, I'm sorry, y'all, my bad. Even if you ain't do it, I'm sorry. What about you, Jay, Demario?
I think language has been the biggest thing I've seen a shift in over the years. Does people like moving from accepting to affirming to now folks want to be embracing? And it's just like watching people go through that evolution in terms of like figuring out what language means and realizing that it's not enough. And just watching folks walk through that. And then just having folks in leadership. I know before I left, I was offered a position in church leadership before I left. But it was just great that they thought of me in that way and that they saw the need to really have folks reflected from the top down as part of these conversations. So I think seeing more folks in leadership, the visibility of that, and then folks really being intentional about languages has been brought up previously.
Nice. Jay?
I would have to agree. I've been seeing a lot of that in different church settings. Just, you know, welcoming, even if they don't have it right all the time, just, you know, trying their best to make sure people feel included. And I think that's important and, you know, an important first step.
Dope. So if you're listening, please share with us your stories on what you've seen churches do to be successful and inclusive and becoming affirming. 202-588-0893. Again, the number is 202-588-0893. And I'll say this for me, we had Reverend Bishop Yvette Flounder come preach a couple of years ago, and she preached the house down. It was this whole message. You know, when preachers go out of town to preach, they take their like top 10 sermons. So, you know, it's always going to be top tier. It's like, all right, I had never heard of her before. And it was this whole metaphor about a shepherd and his sheep. And it was just, Mashawn, for listeners, Mashawn is nodding his head like he's heard this one before.
That's my bishop.
Oh, really? That's got to be one of her top 10, because that thing, that word, ooh, it was beautiful. It was very calm. You know, some preachers yell. She didn't even have to take it there. It was beautiful. And I was, so I think also inviting folks to come preach and come minister, because sexuality at the end of the day doesn't have anything to do with it. Like if you got the gift, you got the gift, you got the sauce, you got the sauce. So come on and invite folks down to come preach, to come minister, to come sing, evangelize, play, whatever it is. So I thought that was a powerful move. So yeah, thank y'all for sharing that. I am curious. I have so many questions. I always have more questions than we do time, which is ironic. So Reverend Mashawn, I was reading, you have so many writings on your website. So I was reading one of your articles and you had mentioned that you no longer believe Jesus is the only way to God. And it was just talking about deconstructing your faith. And that led me to think like how being queer for my own story, leaving church and going to visit other religions and then coming back to that good old big black Jesus on the wall, has made me incorporate other things. So I guess I want to ask you both, how has your queerness affected how you interpret your Christianity or your faith in general?
That's a good question.
Thank you. Try not to use them all today because I have to have them for Saturday
too. Listen, having too many questions is healthy. It's a good thing because you know you don't want a dry conversation. I'm
a conversation. We got a whole candle, Jay.
And by Saturday, she'll probably have 30 more questions ready.
You hear me?
She'll be all right. I think my identity, my being same gender loving, opened the door for me to be curious. More than anything, like it helped me to question validity. But I think my blackness also did that. I pastored a church for a year and a half, and while it was an affirming church, identity or sexuality wasn't always at the forefront. They had a Pentecostal lean, and so that and blackness was always at the forefront, but it helped me to consider something more than what I had been told or taught. But I came to the revelation that Christianity wasn't the only way a long time ago. And it was just because in undergrad, I had the ability to take a sociology of religion course where I attended a Wiccan service, or I went to a Jehovah Witness experience, or I went to a Hindu temple, and I went to a Buddhist, quote unquote, Bible study, if you will. It was more like a meditation, but I like to call it the Bible study. And I saw the parallel and I was like, wait a minute. This is also here. And it's also here. And it's also here. And so it led me to this space of our religions are more like cousins. Than anything. And so that language started for me even before I went to seminary.
Okay.
But my identity gave me the courage to consider something more than what I had been conditioned to believe.
Thank you. What about you, DeMario? Any Wiccan services you visited at Howard University?
Unfortunately, I did not have that experience. I did have a chance to go to a powwow when I was in Montana, and that was
really nice.
But for me, it's just always, it's never reconciled in my brain. If God is so big and so infinite, why are we so keen on limiting God to a specific space? Why does God exist in a specific gender? Why are we praying to him and not her or they or them? Like, why is God only present in these particular types and forms? And if God is universal, it would be plausible that God would appear to different people in different formats. If God is supposed to be personal, if your relationship to God is supposed to be personal, why would it appear exactly the same way to every single person across the entire globe with 6-7 billion plus people? Mm-hmm. It never made sense in my brain. So I was just like, God has to be more than this. More than whatever it is. If God is more than we can fathom or imagine, then that's amazing and awesome. And if all of us are made in God's image, that means God is a man, God is a woman, God is a they, God is a them, God is non-binary, God is very binary, God is this, that, and the other. And all of us are different bits and pieces and reflections of of God, however we decide to view it. But if God is this infinite being, then why are we trying to make it finite?
Mm-hmm.
It seems silly to me.
So you always had that understanding, even before you were like, hey, boy.
It was always the question, but the queerness like kind of tugged at, especially on the gender part. Because one of the guys at the church in Wanlimu, he kind of began this whole thing of like saying mother, father, God. Mm-hmm. And it always started like, that's interesting. Why do we center it on father, God, and not mother, father, or just like God in general? And then the queerness kind of like drove some of those other questions. Well, like, if I'm supposed to be part of this, and if I believe myself to be a reflection of God's image, and I am quite queer, then God's got to be a little queer too. It's got to be some queerness in there. It's got to be something rolling through there. And I feel like if all of us are reflections of God, then each piece of us is part of what God is. We're not divisible in that way.
You just said something, DeMario, that I remember there was a point in time when I was really starting to question. I had this mindset that half of what we know about Jesus is just because that's what they wanted us to know. Well, always question. This is going to sound terrible, but I used to always question the possibility that Jesus might have had his booty played with a few times as well. Like,
homosexual activity during that time was not uncommon.
You know what? I don't put it past nobody. And you know, the queerest moment in the Bible for me is Jonathan and David.
Their
story. I just love their story. I also love it as like a friendship story, but I also love it as a queer love story. I love it both ways.
Point where you forsake the love of women.
Right?
That's a little more than a friendship to me. That's a little more than bros before hoes. I'm just saying. That's a little strong. A little strong to me.
Come on, y'all. And on that, on that note, this is Inside Out, the Fellowship Hall, a sanctuary for queer folks. And you're listening to Jade Flower, Jay Barber, and I'm Daffo the Flower. We're celebrating the LGBTQ community in the Black Church here with Reverend Mashawn and Reverend DeMario. Call us 202-588-0893. We're going to a break now, but go ahead and dial those numbers so when we come back from the break, you can be first in line to tell us all about your church hurt, your church love, your church turnaround story, all that good stuff. Stick with us, WPFW 89.3 FM.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for playing that. That was our Sermonic Selection. That was Brittany Howard. He loves me. I am obsessed with secular artists who sing gospel songs and make up gospel songs, because that was not a gospel song, but it is a gospel song.
That's right.
The lyrics are, I don't go to church anymore, but I know he still loves me. When I know he loves me when I'm smoking bunts. He loves me when I'm drinking too much. He loves me, yeah. When I do what I want, he loves me. He doesn't judge me. Yes, he loves me. And so I just love that song because I smoke a lot. And there you go. So thank you for playing it. Thank y'all for sharing. And so moving into my next question, a lot of millennials, the age group, and I don't know what Gen Z is doing, but I'm sure they're along the same lines, but just are going to church less and less. So it's not just queer folks, right? A lot of women are going to church less. Millennials go to church less. Gen Z goes to church less. I'm making that part up, so anyone can call and correct me. But my question to you two are, do you think we're at risk as a culture of losing the worship experience? And what would we lose if we did? Jay got something to say. Damn, what's your chest, Jay? I'm mute. You can answer too. Shoot.
I working at schools, I have definitely seen the absence of the church in how children show up to school. Like before, you know, you had to do the Easter speeches or you had to get up in front of the congregation and say some things or whatever. It led you to have a different experience when it came to being around adults that I'm no longer seeing, which is kind of unfortunate. It's, so I'm really interested in this question. How do you see it going away, or is there a way that we could save it and bring it back?
I don't. I'm not concerned yet, but I am also incredibly connected to other preachers and pastors, so there's perspective because I have access in a different kind of way, and I know that there's one here in Atlanta in particular that is heavily focused on Gen Z. Like they literally just ordained a youth pastor and a young adult pastor because they recognize just how important it is. And their youth ministry work is, I have my opinions about this church for a lot of different reasons, but seeing what they are doing with these young people and the way in which they are, like my godbrother posted on Facebook this morning that he was prepared to get up to have to get one of his little girls ready for the morning, and she was already up. And she was already up because she had jumped on a prayer line phone call. And this little girl is like 10, 11, maybe 12. So I was impressed by that. But then when I stopped and I thought about it, I was like, but that's what this church is committed to. I do agree with you, Jay, that in some spaces, it's not what it used to be. But I think it's not what it used to be for a lot of different reasons that aren't always just about religion and faith. Like, mm-hmm. Some of these mamas and daddies are just trying to get by, and you know, mm-hmm. there are all these other factors at play that.
But wasn't the church, I don't mean to interrupt, but wasn't the church a space for that? Right? I know.
You're right.
Or you know, how I was growing up, like food was served. You know, if somebody was going through something, there was a collection taken up. Like the church was the, you know, the band-aid for when the community center started going away, right? And though the church took up a lot of that slack, and it was still community. And I'm just, you know, unfortunately feel like in the public sector and the, you know, just, you know, without having much to go on, it's not really, I'm not seeing it.
Yeah.
Not like not like when I was coming up, not,
That's why I was saying that I think it. What I see here is not the case everywhere, and in these everywhere moments. I mean, a lot of the times these churches were able to do those programs because they had the support of the county or the city in which they lived in. So, you know, they could provide free food or they could provide space because they were getting grants. And a lot of that has dried up. Like these counties and these cities aren't supporting these churches in the same way that they used to anymore. There are a lot of different factors sort of playing into it above and beyond just the fact that what they're preaching on Sunday morning is trash and they really should get it together. Because what they're preaching on Sunday morning is trash and they really should get it together. But there are spaces where I am seeing it happen and where they are creating for young people in a unique way that I think is laying a foundation for who they become moving forward.
So we're hearing both sides right now. And it's funny because your environment kind of really affects your mindset in a way. So Reverend Mashon, who is in these spiritual spaces and around a lot of other preachers, you're like, yes, the glass is half full. And for Jay, who is in school spaces and public spaces, Jay is like, Lord, take the wheel. Demario, you are also in the public space. So where are you coming from? What do you think?
No, I think Michelle makes some great points. There's a lot of grant dollars that are missing, a lot of philanthropic dollars that are missing from the church. But I think a lot of times it comes down to what are we inviting folks to? What kind of space are we asking folks to be part of? And I think we have to recognize that people at the end of the day are self-interested. So the question is, what am I getting out of this experience? I can worship the Lord at home. I can do that by myself. What do I need to come to this building for? What am I getting out of it? And what you should be getting is a religious experience in a communal setting that you can't get by yourself and access to services that you wouldn't get otherwise. But if folks aren't focusing on those services and they aren't creating a loving, warm, welcoming atmosphere, then why get out of bed? Oh, I can just watch it on TV. And I think we have to accept that, like, folks coming into the church is going to look different because folks aren't coming into physical locations, period, the same way that they used to. The club is not the same. So why would the church house be the same? Mm-hmm. I think people need to think about that. But just like it's redefining how we view church and what we think it should look like, but also really focusing on like serving the folks that we're there to serve with a message that means something, but also with resources that they can take away with them. And also understanding and knowing the community that you're part of. There are a lot of churches that operate as a building inside of a neighborhood, but not as a connector or an anchor for that community. People just know it exists. They don't know what they do. If people don't know what you do, they're not going to be drawn to come to see you because it takes effort. And they can find other ways to spend that effort that's probably going to be a lot more pleasurable, a lot more enjoyable, and requires a lot less work than getting up and getting dressed. And I think for some people, you have a lot of folks who have like a lot of scarring on top of like their religious experiences and all that. But I think a lot of it is really just these buildings becoming places where folks want to be and have community. I think we all generally have a desire and a longing for community. But we have to really talk about what that community should look like and how we're inviting folks into that space. And as Monty would say, meet them with some resources.
Meet them with some resources. Give them something. Free dinner, some condoms, something. Golly. I hope this don't happen Saturday because I'm just so thrown. You just said, and I could stay home for that because... I'm stuck there. Like, I couldn't even keep listening because I'm still stuck there. Like, I could stay home. And it's just like, no, come, because we need each other. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Like, and I think that's why it's so important to have conversations like this, to spread the word about what folks are doing in the community and get folks engaged. I feel like people naturally long to be engaged. We're social creatures. We need each other by design. Otherwise, we'd have a lot more mental health situations going on. But we're socially designed to need each other. But I feel like we have to suss out what people's needs are and actually meet folks where they are and have those conversations and say, hey, I'm here. And I feel like that's what's so great about this Agape Ministry piece that we're doing is that we're intentionally welcoming folks into the space and being like, hey, this is for you. Instead of just saying, oh, yeah, everybody can come. No. You queer boy on the corner. Like, you girl who's questioning. Like, we need to talk to you. Like, come on in. Like, you got hurt by the people who you thought you were supposed to be able to trust. Let's open up that dialogue and continue to have those conversations. And just, like, by intentionally inviting people in, it might not pay off initially, but over time, folks are going to see that you're actually about the work, and then they'll start to build that bridge with community. I believe in that.
I agree. And you're doing God's work. You're doing what Jesus wants you to do. You know, like, what does the community need? You got a whole building right here that you only use on Sunday mornings. You know, what does the community need? Can you open it up for a study hall or a day? I don't know, anything, you know? So I do think church should definitely look to see how they can grow and morph into ways that the community needs them, or reach Gen Z, reach the older millennials, the younger millennials, you know, reach whoever, but be flexible and be aware and put some feelers out to see what folks need and provide that, you know, with love and with genuine love, you know, just as Jesus would. So I really appreciate those words, DeMario. Yeah.
Y'all know what I've been thinking about in terms of inviting people back to service, to worship, to Jesus, to church, to religion, to whatever, because I'm not, you know, Jesus is just okay for me too. Jesus is the homeboy. But I've been thinking about drinks, and I don't know why. I'd be like, can we have some wine after service? And my pastor just looked at me like I was joking, but I wasn't, but I was serious. So I'm like, so can we just go downstairs and have some drinks and talk? Can we have brunch after service with some mimosas? Like, I don't know.
Holy Ghost after hour. Holy Ghost happy
Holy
hour.
Holy Ghost happy hour.
I feel like that's something you could do in partnership with another, or a restaurant outside the church, and make it a community event.
But why is church? I just feel like so many secular things, like the idea of secular, and I'm just pivoting. I'm sorry. This is
it.
Yeah, but just the idea of secularness, just why is it secular? Like, I've never seen people kiss in church. My pastors I grew up with been married 30 years, 50 years. I don't know how long they've been married. I've never seen them kiss, and they've been married forever. Why have you seen them kiss? Why? Why? What's wrong with that? They married people.
That's no, fair.
I've never seen two people kiss my whole life, and my whole 40, almost, to be clear, almost 40, 38 years of going to a church, seeing two people kiss in church, and it's all types of married folks in there. Except when they get married, you know. But
I
it's
think
like,
when they started doing the anniversaries, you started seeing a little bit more. But yeah, you're right. It's not. It's not often. It's not frequent.
Where is the intimacy? Where is the fun? The wine? The, you know, this is life. This is a part of life. But we regulate it to Saturday. But you know, I think if we're talking about how to get people back in or meeting people where they are and getting people to like that's. I don't know what I'm thinking.
No, I don't think that's a bad idea.
I want on buses after service, and I want to see people hold hands in the sanctuary.
I think that's fair.
I've definitely been to a Catholic service, and there is wine and things at the bingo in the basement.
Okay.
And they're the Episcopal Church. They believe in their wine.
Yes.
So we found the model.
You just can't get drunk, right? Get a little, have a couple glasses. Just
yeah,
can't
I'm not trying to turn up, you know. I'm just like, why am I giving busboys my money when I can give it to my place, my thing? Anyway, all right. We got time for one more question, and that is, please, DeMario, can you tell us about this Saturday? What is happening? Where is it happening? Why is it happening? All of the things.
I'll do my best to kind of keep it brief. The dates are running together, but it is this Saturday. What we're having is an agape. What title did we settle on? Because I'm trying to.
Oh, remember. Man. This is tricky.
We've gone through a bunch of titles on the way to where we are. But no, it's an agape panel. It's a film screening. And then there's a Q&A discussion about the film and about queer life in general. With a distinguished panel of folks who are going to share their experiences in the Black church and how they have overcome and how they have found joy in terms of being both Black and queer in religious spaces, and just some of the things we're wrestling with around those conversations, because the purpose of the entire event is around restoration and repair and really having those hard conversations about how folks have been hurt by the church and how the church can do better and how we can have those honest and frank conversations that bring folks back into the space and make them feel welcome and whole. For me, again, the roots of this ministry were just in questions that came up as I was dating someone. And it was starting to get serious. And I was just like, can I bring someone into this space feeling comfortable that they won't just be like unharmed, but that they'll feel welcome and loved and affirmed and embraced, and that they'll have a positive experience? And because I couldn't answer that question with a resounding, hell yeah, they're going to be safe, they're going to be good, they're going to have a great time, I knew that it was time for me to like to make a move. And while it took us a minute to get here, I'm so happy that we are, in terms of building these conversations and having those difficult conversations around belonging. We settled on agape means love. That's right. Celebrating LGBTQ+ in the Black church. Because we don't want it to be just, I don't say an airing of grievances, but we do want people to be able to get their grievances out. But we also want to bring some joy into the room as well and know that this is a celebration of overcoming and triumph. Because as much as the church, and particularly the Black church, because we're Black people, have had these experiences like folks trying to trample out all traces of queerness, we're still here. We are still here. We are still vibrant. We are still present. We are not going anywhere. So as much as it is like, let's talk about how you've been hurt, let's talk about the ways in which we can also better this situation and the ways that we can move this forward into a more integrated church that feels more whole. In addition to the panel and the video screen, the movie screening, Truth Be Told, which is really impactful, there'll also be a care corner, which kind of came out of a conversation that we had, and we'll have some spiritual and mental health professionals who will be in the space to help folks deal with some of the things that come up during this conversation. So as we know, they're going to be heavy, and we know they're going to be some impactful moments. And what we do want to be, we want people to leave again with resources and knowing that they have people that they can talk to and a way to move this conversation forward, because this is just the beginning. This is not an ending.
Thank you. Well said. So Agape Means Love film screening panel care corner will be this Saturday, June 22nd at 12 noon at Union Temple Baptist Church, 1225 W Street, Southeast Washington, D.C. Again, that's Agape Means Love. It'll be a film screening from an Emmy Award-winning director, and the film features Cedric the Entertainer, Billy Porter, Tashina Arnold from Martin, Erica Campbell. Who else is in there? What's her name that's real Christian and pretty? Megan Good. and a whole bunch of other people. And it's 12 p.m. Union Temple Baptist Church, Southeast Washington, D.C. Please find us at UTBC. I'm making up that website. Just Google Union Temple Baptist Church, Southeast, and you'll find that information. It's 100% free. We do recommend that you RSVP, but if you just show up there, the doors of the church are always, always open. Reverend Mashawn and DeMario, thank you so much for joining us. Is there any way we can support the two of you and your work outside of this Saturday?
Keep me lifted up in prayer and keep a drink cold for me after service. That'd be great. And it's at Union Temple DC on social media if you need to find it there.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, be praying for that Reverend DeMario Green.
No, Reverend.
Well, this has been a joy and a pleasure. Thank you all for inviting me and offering this opportunity to participate. I think any way to support me, you can find me on all social media platforms at Mashawn D. Simon. That's M-A-S-H-A-U-N, the letter D-S-I-M-O-N. You can find that on Instagram, X, Twitter, whatever that is, Facebook, and even TikTok. And just like in the same way, just be praying for me. My husband and I will be traveling to D.C. this Wednesday on Juneteenth to come and celebrate with you all on Saturday. I have family in the area, so it's a nice little mix of a family visit, trip, come do work situation. And Sunday is my husband and I's 6-year wedding anniversary. We'll be there with you all celebrating for the weekend. But this has been a joy and a pleasure. And thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Talk about divine providence. That was
one. Yes. You're listening to the Fellowship Hall on Inside Out.
We're here, we're queer, and we ain't going nowhere. All right. Thank y'all so much for listening. See y'all what? Saturday. Hey.
See y'all Saturday. Hey.
Good for y'all.
PACA, Pan-African Community Action, will be holding the Community Town Hall, The Harm of Crime Bills, and the Future of Community Power in Chaka City. On Saturday, July 13th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., D.C. residents are invited to discuss how the Secure D.C. Crime Bill targets the Black working class and criminalizes our youth, and how to develop real people-centered solutions to community safety. There will be speakers, group exercises, lunch, and a performance by the Afro-Go-Go Roots Collective, Crank Lukongo Unplugged. The Harm of Crime Bills and the Future of Community Power in Chocolate City, Saturday, July 13th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the RISE Demonstration Center, 2730 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Southeast D.C. More information and registration can be found online, PACA, that's P-A-C-A, crimebilltownhall.eventbrite.com. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, this is Robin Holden. On Sunday, July 7th, from 4 until 8 p.m., WPFW is presenting a fundraising evening of roots, rock, reggae at Mango Cafe, 4719 Annapolis Road in Blaytonsburg, Maryland, featuring the Proverbs Reggae Band with Z Lion and special guests Freedom and Saroma Lee L. Proceeds to benefit WPFW. Details, WPFWFM.org.
WPFW's 2024 election to seat members to represent you on the local station board has started. Renew your membership by making a minimum donation of $25 or completing 3 hours of eligible volunteer work by June 30th in order to be a candidate, nominate candidates, or vote. Visit elections.pacifica.org for more information or call 707-500-1910 to leave a voicemail for the election supervisor. Do you love WPFW? Now is your chance to get involved by participating in the local station board. Run for a seat on the board by becoming a candidate between June 1st and June 30th. Complete your candidate package located on elections.pacifica.org. Call 707-500-1910 to leave a voicemail for the election supervisor.
This is movement time, and when it's movement time, we can all be together.
Reverend Dr. William Barber.
We are here to announce that on June the 29th at 10 o'clock on Pennsylvania and 3rd, we are calling for the Mass Poor People's Low Wage Workers Assembly and Moral March.